everybody, and welcome in to another special podcast right here on Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zaglul, and on today's show, we're welcoming back a very special guest to recap the NFL draft, talk about the NCAA March Madness tournament, and take a look back at his amazing broadcast journalism career. And I always look forward to catching up with today's special guest specifically because, number one, he brings in so much expertise about the NFL and NCAA men's basketball. But number two, he's never afraid to state his mind. He's always very honest, very candid about what he says, and I appreciate that as an interviewer. So I hope you're looking forward to this interview just as much as I am, and I thank you for tuning in to today's show. Before we get started today, make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Instagram at JohnZax, Twitter at JohnZSports, and LinkedIn at JohnZaglul. Today's show is brought to you by Moochie World, where inspiration meets creation. Call 708-247-2100 to book parties, paint your own pottery, and have art projects for adults and children. Moochie World, creativity at its finest. And by the Windy City Thunderbolts. Celebrate the team's 20th anniversary season by purchasing tickets right now. Call 708-489-2255 for your chance to be a part of history this summer in Crestwood. It's now time for our special guest. He began his broadcast journalism career at WMAQ-TV here in Chicago, serving as the network's lead sportscaster. By 1979, he became a lead reporter, anchor, and play-by-play broadcaster at ESPN. After 10 years with the worldwide leader, he joined CBS Sports, broadcasting NFL, MLB, NBA, and college basketball games. Following a brief stint with NBC, he returned to CBS in 1998, where he still is today, broadcasting NFL games while serving as a studio host during NCAA March Madness. Please welcome Greg Gumbel to the show. Greg, how are you doing today? Thank you for being here on the show.
I'm not doing so badly, thank you, John. I still have friends and relatives in Chicago who tell me that from day to day, sometimes it's still winter up there, but that's typically Chicago.
Well, to start today, Greg, let's take a look back at the NFL draft occurring this past weekend. Now, before we delve into some specifics, what were your general thoughts on the draft? And are there any teams that come to mind in particular that did well or poorly?
I don't really believe, John, I'm not trying to dodge your question, but there is way too much speculation in the world of sports. And some people might say, well, that's what sports should be all about. And maybe so. But you have people who say, this team just did well, this team did not. This team is situated now to go to the Super Bowl. This team has no shot. When, in fact, I've always maintained that you have no idea how a team is going to come together until at least a month or 6 weeks into the NFL season, because you don't know how rookies are going to pan out. We know very well highly touted rookies have not lived up to billing at all, and whether or not that's fair or not is another question, but they haven't lived up to expectations. There are some rookies that rise from nothing to be outstanding football players. There are some players who are better football players in college than they are in the NFL and vice versa. So to say that this team is well-equipped going forward is, I think, nonsense. Because you don't know, in addition to how the rookies are going to perform or not perform, you don't know how the loss of free agents is going to affect the team. You don't know how the acquisition of free agents in the offseason is going to affect the team. Or how about players returning from injury? That's why it's all speculation, and to me, it's useless speculation because, you don't find very many of these guys stepping up at the end of the season who predicted that this team was going to be playing in the Super Bowl admitting that they were wrong. It's not just related to football. It's pretty much all sports. You've got so many people talking sports on radio and television whose job it is, and I understand their job. I did that job for a year. I hated it. I was a morning guy at WFAN radio when it first came into existence. And those guys are there simply to argue, to make a fuss, to create disturbance. If people write about it in the paper, and you would think, oh, that'd be devastating if they were writing about me, they're ecstatic because that's that old story about, you know, never wrestle with in the mud with a pig, because when it's all over, you're all dirty and the pig loves it. You know, I think that I think that it's their job to create all kinds of fuss, and included in that is making predictions. If you will notice, I'm not big on making predictions on the air. I just don't do it. Everybody else on the panel can do it and likes to do it, but I don't. And it's just simply because it's assuming too many things. I thought March Madness was a great example of that. There were some people who thought that Texas Tech didn't deserve to be where they were. Well, of course they did, because they won all the games in front of them. And someone said, well, Duke should have won and Michigan should have won. No, they shouldn't have, because they didn't score more points than their opposition on a given game. So it's those kinds of things that give me pause and make me take a step back from the way things usually go.
You know, a program director or someone in the business would argue saying ratings and money matter, but obviously that's not the right argument to have talking about what you just said. What do you think is a solution to this problem about the consistent speculation, the over-speculation of sports, and how it factors into today's audiences listening or watching?
I'm not sure it's a problem, John. It's not a problem for me because I don't ever listen to it. but I think there are people who go out and base their whole arguments on something that they heard someone say on the radio. And by the way, the proof in the pudding is that, and I'm sure you've heard it as well, some guys will take a stance one day and take the opposite stance the next day. And that doesn't show any conviction or any thought. It just simply means that the aim and the goal is to generate conversation that at times gets a little animated and excitable. So, by the way, I understand it perfectly. The end game is ratings. And I understand that, and I'm not arguing that. There have been people who have been doing different things down through the years in all aspects of broadcasting, and it's for the sole purpose of getting ratings. You know, in television programming, if there were series that were due to wind up in November or in February, which was sweeps months and where the ratings count the most as far as advertising sales go. So I understand all of that. It's just that I don't happen to be a fan of it, and I don't dictate how my day is going to go according to it.
Greg Gumbel here on Sports Talk Chicago. And Greg, going back to the NFL draft for a moment, obviously some big headlines include, number one, that the Cardinals selected Kyler Murray with the number one overall pick and traded away Josh Rosen. Do you think they made the right decision in drafting Murray and trading away Rosen after just one season in the NFL?
Hard to tell. We won't know that until the end of the football season, depending on how well Kyler Murray performed. I will tell you this, there is no question that if Kyler Murray doesn't get better blocking from his offensive line than Josh Rosen did, and if he doesn't get better performance out of his running backs than Josh Rosen did, he's pretty much going to wind up with the same on-the-field record as Josh Rosen did. Now, having said that, Kyler Murray is an outstanding athlete. There's no question about that. It's my own personal prejudices that if I were in his position, I would have chosen baseball for a number of reasons. Number one, baseball is my favorite sport, period. Number two, you are a lot less likely to get hurt and have a longer career in baseball than you do in the National Football League. And Kyler Murray, while he ran wild in college and may do a little running wild in the NFL, he's more likely to get run over by a 300-pound railroad train, you know what I mean? He's more likely to get hurt in the National Football League, and he'll find out that there are a lot more guys that are equivalent to his speed in the NFL than there were in college. Is he a talented guy? Of course he is. But I do think that if I were faced with that choice, and again, I don't know what his views are of his baseball skills, but they're pretty good for him to have been picked number one, by the Oakland A's. The fact is that we don't know how he's going to perform at the NFL level. Cliff Kingsbury obviously knows him better than most. Obviously knows him better than most and feels that he can get the most out of him. I wish Kyler Murray well. I think that it's interesting how the whole NFL picture is changing at the quarterback position, because 5, 6, 8 years ago, people would have just written him off and said, oh, he's way too short, because the prototypical quarterback is 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", stuff like that. Can he do it? He might. He might, and more power to him. And that's probably, if he is successful, that will open the door even more to kids coming out of school who aren't as big as Joe Flacco and who aren't as big as Andrew Luck and, you know, and Aaron Rodgers and the rest of the quarterbacks who can actually see over the offensive and defensive line a little better than the little guys. But he might be a resounding success, and I would applaud him if he is. But to sit here right now and say if it was a mistake or not, I don't think we can do that until we see the results.
You know, you mentioned the quarterback position and how it's changed over the years. What are your thoughts on that? Because, as you mentioned, Kyler Murray years ago would have been written off. And just in general, we're seeing today just an influx of passing and offense in the NFL. Do you like the way or the direction in which the game is going today?
Yeah, I think that the whole idea and the goal is to make it as exciting as possible for fans. And, boy, you'd have to go way back to study up on who Woody Hayes was at Ohio State and what he was all about, because Ohio State was run. It was acceptable, especially for Ohio State, because it produced winning teams and results and going to the Rose Bowl every year or every other year or pretty close to it, and a great deal of success. But it was boring football to watch. And, go back to North Carolina's basketball teams with Dean Smith running the four corners offense. They basically had a lead, and then they ran the four corners offense to run down the clock and to maximize that lead with the amount of time remaining. It was effective. It was successful, but it wasn't fun to watch. So changes have been made down through the years in order to increase viewership and increase fan excitement about it. And look, let's face it, a 3-yard run doesn't equivocate to a 59-yard touchdown pass. And the fact that there are people who are fast enough to go get those passes and strong enough to throw those passes makes the NFL the game that it is today. And in fact, I think you've seen an increase in college football to keep pace with the NFL, because they throw the football nowadays way more than they ever used to.
Talking about the NFL and about its move towards an offensive system, I think we're seeing that today in other sports as well. Major League Baseball, the NBA, now we're seeing all of these high-scoring games. And as you mentioned earlier, it's all about, you know, increasing viewership, increasing ratings. Do you find that a problem as well? Just the fact that across the board, each major sport here in North America is increasing in its offensive production and in its excitement on the offensive side of things.
Well, I'm not sure that you can always say that excitement is the end product. It may be the goal, but it's not always the product. I think, for instance, it is unbelievably ridiculous that the NBA has changed the game of basketball to five guys run up and stop outside the three-point line and take a shot. Because there are way more three-point field goal attempts than there has ever been. And the game of basketball, from the game that we grew up watching and knowing, is completely different because of the effect of the three-point shot and because of the excitement that it generates in the fans. In baseball, the very fact that there are often more strikeouts than base hits in a game, in a month, in a season, is ridiculous, because what it says is these guys are up there not trying to play the game as we all learned it in Little League. It's to see if you can hit a home run. There are major leaguers up there who are facing three infielders between first and second, and it's wide open between second and third, and yet no one wants to lay down a bunt. Everybody is still swinging for the fences. There have been big leaguers. Gosh, was it a New York Met last year? He came to bat, and the Mets needed to advance a runner, and this guy was swinging away. And after the game, they asked the manager, why didn't you have him bunt? He goes, you've never bunted before. He did not possess the ability to lay down a sacrifice bunt, which is ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. But that is the nature of the game these days. It's not one that I agree with. Look, we've done a lot to screw up sports along the way. I think replay is horrible in every single sport that they use it in. It's absolutely ridiculous. But the fact is that it's probably here to stay, and there are some idiots who are trying to figure out how they can use it even more. you know, the day that they make they have a robotic umpire calling balls and strikes instead of a man behind the plate, is the day I'll probably walk away from baseball, because look what we've lost in baseball. There are times that there's an inning-ending double play, or is there? Because one team has challenged the call at first. So players have to stand around and wait while the umpires consult on the headset to find out whether or not the inning is really over or not. And to have a guy not behind the plate and balls and strikes, if you take a look at that box that they insert on the screen, the one for Jose Altuve pretty much looks like the one for Aaron Judge. So chest to letters is quite a bit different in different players. But yet that doesn't seem to bother someone. I know what the argument is. The argument is you got to get it right. And you know what? We all grew up at some point with the referees and umpires' decisions being what it is. What have we lost in baseball? I miss arguments. I miss arguments between the umpire and the manager. Gosh, what would Lou Piniella have done? What would Earl Weaver in Baltimore have done? Because they made their reputations on arguing with the umpire. Those were things that we discussed at the water cooler on Monday after a Sunday game. And that just doesn't happen anymore. And I miss that. And I don't believe that the overall desire to get a particular call right is necessarily good for the game when you're going to put all kinds of stops and starts into a game and, you know, interrupting the flow of the game. Replay was originally intended to eliminate the egregiously bad calls. Now it's being used for everything, and it's way overdone. And I don't think there is a sport that has benefited from replay. I think they're all hurt by replay.
And what's ironic about the fact that replay, especially in the MLB, is instituted, is the claim that it will speed up the pace of play and will make the games go quicker and we'll get it under 3 hours. But as you mentioned, if anything, it just causes more problems and continues to slow things down.
Look, first of all, baseball is not run by brainiacs. Far from it. They have, you remember the thing last year about limiting the number of trips to the mound? They said that was taking too much time out of the game. So they went back and they took a look at the average number of trips to the mound that each team took, and it was 6. So they came down with a decree that we're now going to limit the number of trips to the mound to 6. You know, why would you do that? Why would you do that? It is so ridiculous. We had, you know, we had the whole steroid thing with Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa and that whole thing. And it was encouraged by baseball that this was the greatest thing going. And not once did they stop to say, gee, I wonder if these guys are doing anything illegal because they're suddenly hitting home runs where no one has ever hit them before. And suddenly the whole thing about steroids and drug abuse in baseball came down. And here comes Bud Selig, the commissioner, riding in on a white horse to call a halt to all of this. Well, this is after he and the baseball owners have profited from all of this. And to me, that's equivalent to setting a building on fire, and then a couple of minutes later, you come riding around the corner driving the fire truck. You know, you're not doing yourself, you're not doing your fans any favor. And then they go and they put him in the Hall of Fame. I don't get it. But there are a lot of things, there are a lot of problems that that baseball tries to cover up. And you know, the fact that there are people who still hit home runs, look, are the salaries out of control? Sure they are. You know, you guys who can hit 240 in Major League Baseball making $7, $8, $10, $12 million a year. And you know, as long as the owners are trying to one up each other, then that's gonna be good for the athletes.
I wanted to move now to some NCAA March Madness news, and it was a hectic tournament to say the least. I mean, from day one, when we saw Murray State and John Morant take down Marquette, then later in the Elite Eight, obviously, as we talked about earlier on, Duke losing to Michigan State, and finally, UVA winning it all after the year before losing to the 16-seeded UMBC. What were your impressions on just March Madness in general, and also, where does this specific one rank among some of the greatest ones you've been able to cover?
I thought it was a really good tournament. And, you know, quite often we tend, and I say we, I'm talking about us in the studio, we tend to rank the quality of the tournament by the quality of the games. I happen to think that the NCAA tournament over the years has been known for its buzzer beaters. The only buzzer beater that I can recall in this tournament was Virginia hitting a shot at the buzzer to tie the game and send it into overtime where they won. But they hit a buzzer beater to avoid defeat and then won it in OT. Other than that, I don't believe there was another buzzer beater throughout the tournament, but the games were close. They were competitive. And as the broadcaster and the network carrying the tournament, I think that's really all you could ask for, the fact that they're competitive games. All too often, you know, we always talk about the upsets, too, and the upsets are fun to watch. But the problem is that that team maybe wasn't as good throughout the regular season and then for whatever reason found their jump shot in this tournament game and beat a higher-rated team. They suddenly move on to the next round and they get their butts kicked by an even higher-rated team. So there is that. But I thought that the tournament was well played all the way around. You know, there was the ridiculous argument at the end of the game when it cost was it Auburn the game, the foul at the end of the game, and the kid hit three shots. You know, people would like to argue that that was a horrible call by the officials. It was a foul. It was a foul, and all too often in sports, officials don't make a call that should be made just because of the circumstances, just because it's late in the game, or, you know, hockey officials have been known for that for a long time. That's a foul right up until about 5 minutes left in the third period. Then it's no longer a foul than anything knows, and the same is in overtime. I think that if it's a penalty, then you call it a penalty. If it's a foul, it's a foul. If it is a strike, you call it a strike, and then it doesn't matter who's on the mound or who's at the plate. You follow the rules of the game.
I wanted to now shift gears to your broadcasting career, and as I alluded to in your bio, you began your career here in Chicago, you went to ESPN, you also worked for WFAN and MSG before a memorable tenure that's still going strong at CBS. What's been your secret in becoming such a well-known figure in sports media today, and how have you maintained such a distinguished career over the years?
Well, I think you tied in the second part with the first part, John. I think that a lot of success can be attributed to longevity. And for longevity, I think you have to be very fortunate. You have to be fortunate, number one, that the fans like what you do. And you have to be fortunate that your bosses like what you do. Because you can be really good at what you do, but if you have no place to do it, that's not going to help you at all. I happen to like the people at CBS, and I'm fortunate that they have liked me down through the years. But to be able to have been able to do the things that I do at a network like CBS has been such a privilege because I know so many people would love to have the opportunity to do that. It's so strange, and it's only a quirk of fate. I've never been fired in a business that's known for it. And when you are fired in our business, it's nothing demeaning. It's nothing that should be looked at as detrimental to your character or to your ability to perform. It's just one person's opinion. If that person happens to be the decision maker, then so be it. But I don't think that you can draw a common thread through all of the broadcasters at the major networks and find that they all do the same thing the same way, because they don't. It's a matter of just because they like what I do at CBS, there's no guarantee that they would like what I do elsewhere. And which is fine with me because I have no plans to go elsewhere. But I enjoy what I'm doing. I like to think that comes through. I don't inject any phony attitudes. I don't inject any phony calls or any false excitement in what I do. I think that the fans hear how excited I am just naturally. You know, it's not something that I'm putting out there and trying to convince. I'm not trying to convince people that they should be watching what they're already watching. I think that's the dumbest thing that a lot of people do. There was a football game last season, and it was between two terrific teams. And the announcers kept saying, oh, they're trying to keep telling you what a great game this is, when if you're sitting there watching it, you already know it. So I try not to overstate things. And I think that I'd like to think that the viewers and listeners understand that and appreciate that. And that, my whole goal is to make a viewer comfortable without intruding. I used to do baseball, and as I said, my baseball has always been my favorite sport. I played it in school, and I would have played it in the major leagues too if I had been able to hit a curveball, but I couldn't. But the fact is that there are so many baseball announcers who do nothing but talk, and filling air on a baseball game is forever. And you don't get the chance anymore, even in football games. We as viewers don't get the chance to hear the sounds of the game anymore. You don't often get to see. I've told this to my own crew. You know, people like to see the team in the huddle. They like to see the team break the huddle. We take particular pride in making sure that you can hear the signals being called. Those, to me, are all important things in the enjoyment of watching sports. The same with baseball. I mean, I enjoy watching a game and the occasional comment, but I don't want to hear a guy talking wall to wall over trying to convince you that he knows the game of baseball and how good a friend he is of the first base coach or whatever. That to me is beyond superfluous and can ruin a game. I mean, I run across announcers and I go, oh, I can't wait to watch this, and then you find out who the announcer is, and you go, nope. I mean, Lucy, if I Love Lucy is on or something, because it can drive me nuts. And that's just my personal view, but that's how I feel about it.
Is there an opportunity for you to broadcast baseball in the future? You keep mentioning, you know, it's your favorite sport. Is there ever a chance, or has there been an opportunity recently for you to get back in the booth and broadcast a game or two?
Not recently. I last did baseball when CBS had the baseball contract in the early 90s. And you know, the problem, of course, that is presented to all of us is you have to work at a place that does baseball, and I do not at this point. And you know, and I don't anticipate that CBS will be getting back into the baseball business anytime soon. But it is I used to do the College Baseball World Series too at CBS, and that annual trip to Omaha was a real treat. And there was a time. The Chicago White Sox asked me if I had an interest in doing their games, and I did and I didn't. You know, that's a special kind of demand to do games for a team, because you're home 2 weeks, you're on the road 2 weeks. You're home 2 weeks, you're on the road 2 weeks. And that's a tough lifestyle to maintain. The other thing is that when you do games for a particular team, you are expected to come off sounding like a fan of that team. And, you know, the other guys may go by their last name, Williams and Johnson and Berger, but our guys are Jeff and Sam and Tim, you know. And you're supposed to be really happy when they win or really happy when a call goes their way, and the umps are terrible when a call goes against them. I am not that way. I am pretty much down the line, I would think, in whatever sport that I do. I don't cheer for either side. I applaud a play, whoever makes it. And if that's not good enough, and I don't believe it is good enough for broadcasters of local teams, then I just go on my merry way, and I don't miss it. I don't miss doing that, because I would have to do it the way I do it or not at all.
When talking about your current workload now with CBS, I know last year a third member of your broadcast team was added in Bruce Arians, the coach who's now back with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. What was that dynamic like, having a successful head coach in the booth, and also what were the new challenges and or adjustments that you had to make yourself having a three-person booth?
Well, first of all, if you go from a two-person booth to a three-person booth, the first thing you do is sacrifice a little of your own personal time, which is fine as long as it works well. Bruce, our problem was basically teaching him the business, teaching him how you go about doing a broadcast. We got together with Bruce last summer after he agreed to come to work with CBS, and we went into a booth with some videotapes and stuff down in Dallas, and a couple of advisors sitting around, and we were just doing test runs, he and I and Trent Green, and just feeling each other out, because being comfortable with the person, getting to know what they're going to say and when they're going to say it and the cadence that they speak with. You know, there's nothing worse than starting to talk when the other guy hasn't stopped talking yet. So that's going to happen. It happens at the beginning of seasons when you're falling out of the habit. Having said that, Bruce was willing to try and worked hard at everything to try to do things right, and he did. His problem has always been that he's kind of a more soft-spoken guy. Great sense of humor, knows the game as well, if not better than most. But his problem was that his comments were kind of like quiet, and they didn't project well for the audience. And we had to keep reminding Bruce that you're not talking to us, you're talking to the viewing audience and the listening audience. He kind of started to get that towards the latter part of the season. But the reason that I think, more than anything else, the reason that I think that he went back to the game is because every Friday, at the site of a game, we were at games. He was along the sidelines watching practice and talking to coaches, and I think he missed it. And I think that's why, when the opportunity came up with Tampa Bay, that he chose to go back. He was enjoying being with us every week. I don't know if the schedule was tough for him, but we're kind of used to traveling every week. And, you know, a couple of guys say, well, hey, Bruce tries to travel with the team. I thought, yeah, but only half the year. The other half of the year, he's at home, you know. But I think he's happier doing what he does best. And we were just thrilled to be a part of a crew with him. And we still maintain contact with him. He's a great guy.
And before we let you go today, Greg, I have to ask you about the 2016 NCAA tournament, more specifically during the Oregon versus Oklahoma Elite Eight game. Because during your halftime report with Clark Kellogg, Kenny Smith, and Charles Barkley, you were all portrayed as Muppets as you broke down some key points from the first half. Was that the craziest experience that you've been a part of on TV?
I thought it was pretty innovative. That was the idea of our producer, Deb Gelman. And she had the idea to have the Muppets people make up the puppets that resembled us, supposedly resembled us. I'm a little bit offended from time to time, but it was fun to do. And what we did was we concocted a segment to talk about things, and then they put the puppets to work to mimic what we were saying. And I thought it was pretty funny. It was pretty interesting. And then I asked them for one of the puppets at the end of the whole thing, and gave it to my granddaughter, and she got a kick out of having it. Apparently, my Muppet has a place of honor in her cabinet.
Well, Greg, thank you so much for being here on the show today. Really had a great time, and hope to have you on again real soon. Thank you.
My pleasure, John. Thank you. Best wishes to you.
What an honor it was to welcome Greg Gumbel back onto the show as we talked with him about some NFL draft news, NCAA March Madness, plus his legendary broadcast journalism career. And as I mentioned before the interview, what I always enjoy about Greg is that, yes, he brings you expertise and lots of it, but also he's very candid in his responses, and he's not afraid to laugh once in a while and have a good time. And I think that's what makes the interview so much fun to be a part of. I mean, one second we're talking about the NFL draft, winners and losers, and the next we're talking about the Muppets and how they recreated the NCAA March Madness studio cast. So it was a great time as always, and I'm so happy that Greg took the time to come here on today's show. I'm so glad that you decided to join us along for the ride today. Before we finish up now, just a few quick announcements. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Instagram at JohnZags, Twitter at JohnZSports, and LinkedIn at JohnZagluel. Also, if you'd like to become a subscriber to the website, simply type in your email on the subscription box of the site, click yes on the confirmation email, and from there, you'll be subscribed. You'll receive every new podcast and article directly to your email. And remember, Sports Talk Chicago is now on iTunes and Google Play. Simply search Sports Talk Chicago, and every podcast from the 2018-19 calendar year is now available. Feel free to leave us a 5-star rating and/or write a review. Your support is greatly appreciated. And finally, if you enjoyed today's podcast, make sure to check out my new radio show, every Tuesday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on 88.5 WHPK-FM Chicago. You'll still hear my same hard-hitting Chicago sports opinions, plus we'll cover national sports news, have special segments, and of course, welcome very special guests to each and every show. Again, that's every Tuesday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on 88.5 WHPK-FM Chicago. Thank you again for listening in to today's show, and have a great day.